This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Hello and welcome to the Rush Marconzi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Friday. Let's not waste any time. Let's head out to the Circa Sports guest hotline, and joining us now from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Mona, G. Hay Wiley. Grant, I want to start with you here first, because we kind of have joked about this several times during the NBA postseason. For whatever reason, despite the fact that the Dallas Mavericks are in the finals, it takes them a game to realize that they are playing in a series. They have now gotten blown out by, or at least have trailed by 25 or more points in the game one of their three series. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. They've basically gotten blown out in the first game of their series. The good news for the Mavericks, obviously, is that they've gotten this far. So they came back and found a way to beat the Clippers, beat the Thunder, and beat the Timberwolves. The big question is, can they come back from getting blown out in game one to beat the Boston Celtics? First of all, Grant, your thoughts on game one. And again, you've seen this play out throughout the postseason, but the big question is, can they now do this against the Boston Celtics?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to see the Celtics just take full control of this game in the first half. Obviously, you know, we know how good the Celtics are. And, you know, I was talking about this with you, actually, Arash, is how important Kristaps Porzingis was to this team, how good he was as a rim protector. He was a top five rim protector in the league in the regular season. He was sorely missed. I know that the Celtics swept in the Eastern Conference Finals. I know that, you know, people say they had an easy road, but, you know, he's a game changer. Kristaps Porzingis is a complete game changer for the Celtics team. And we saw it in game one. There's a reason why I picked the Celtics to win the series, is because of him and his health. I did not expect him to look this good. However, he was absolutely sensational. He was hitting it from three, from the mid range, in the paint. He was great in the pick and roll. He was great on defense as a rim protector, like I mentioned. And Jaylen Brown kind of took over. Jason Tatum had a bad game, but it doesn't even matter when your whole collective team is playing like this. You know, the Celtics, that's what they can get away with. You know, one guy doesn't play well, and this is kind of the philosophy that the Clippers tried to bring, but we're seeing it in real time with the Celtics, is that if one guy's off or if one guy's hurt, it doesn't matter, because we have so many stars in that lineup. And we saw the full power of that Celtics team. I mean, defensively, they were hounding everybody. They were not letting the Mavs get anything in the paint. While Luka Doncic did have a pretty good game offensively, Kyrie did not. And if you take one of their two stars out of the game, you're probably probably going to win. And that's what Minnesota did in that game that they won in the Western Conference Finals. That's what the Thunder did in some of their games that they won, and what the Clippers did in some of their wins as well. You take one or two out of them, or both out of the game, and you have a pretty decent chance. And with the Celtics playing like this, I mean, I'm not going to say that it's going to be an easy series. I think the Dallas Mavericks are going to still be in the series. It's going to be a long series, but man, what a blowout. Even after the Mavericks cut it down to single digits, Arash, the Celtics came right back and pushed that up to 20. So they have the ability to do that. And this is the Celtics team that we all thought we were getting. I'm just surprised that it was such a blowout. But with Kristaps Porzingis playing like that, I mean, I don't give the Mavericks a pretty good chance here, because Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford were getting thrown around by this physical Celtics team.
You know, G.A., normally when you get a big player to come back, whether it's a starter, whether it's a role player, there's some concern about how that player is going to get fit back into the system. Again, Kristaps Porzingis was a big reason that the Celtics had the number one seed, but they essentially got to the NBA Finals without him. When I say seamlessly he returned, I mean it was beyond seamlessly. I mean, he fit in perfectly. He came off the bench. He added 20 points. He was as effective and as efficient as he could possibly be. To Grant's point, if that's the Kristaps Porzingis that we're going to see in the series, and if this is the Boston Celtics what we're going to see in the series, I'm not going to say it's a sweep, but I don't think there's any doubt that the Boston Celtics are going to win. Were you surprised again? Not surprised that Kristaps was able to come back again. There was a lot of feeling that if there was this long of a break between the conference finals, which was a sweep for the Celtics, to game one of the finals, that he was going to come back. But, you know, generally you come back on a minutes restriction. You're really not yourself. I mean, you know, don't want to bring up a sore spot for you and Grant, but, you know, the Kawhi situation where, okay, he's back, but he's not really himself. Kristaps Porzingis looked amazing in game one. G.A., your thoughts on his performance and the way that the Boston Celtics looked in game one?
Well, I know Grant and I don't really want to talk about this, but we also have to take into consideration that Porzingis and Kawhi are just not the same. They're just not the same. Would it be great if, you know, Kawhi can come back on the court like Porzingis did in game one? Absolutely, of course, it would be ideal. But it just shows you that they're just both playing on a totally separate level. Porzingis comes in, and I don't know if you guys saw this before he even when he was coming in for warmups, how much the crowd received him. It was like a literal homecoming. He's been there. He just hasn't obviously been playing. So like this crowd is embracing the crap out of him. That being said, I mean, I think that him and Jaylen Brown live in the same building, and he was just like, why are you smiling all the time? He just loves to be there. He loves the game that much and just loves to be there. I think he was just itching to finally be like, dude, this is what I can do. Let's win. And if we see what he did in the actual season, you know, that's obviously, I think that he's going to be bringing that kind of energy in to the game, whether he, you know, played the way that he played with 20 plus points and all those boards, or, you know, if he just maybe just brings something else to that game for Boston. That being said, no, I'm not surprised really, that he played like this. I don't think anybody's really surprised that he played like this, because he played like this majority of the season until he got hurt. And I'm sure that this was the tactical part on the Boston Celtics coaching staff on their mind, was that we need to just give him as much time as humanly possible, right? Because he just looked ready. He looked really ready. It looked like maybe he was like underground practicing real game time stuff, like before we even, you know, while he was on this break. So he looked extraordinarily ready. It does also help to play in TD Garden as well when you are the home team. It's definitely, talk about home court advantage.
Yeah.
TD Garden is home court advantage for sure. I will, however, say this though, man, Dallas, you got to work on some rebounding and going to the basket, because that was lacking the entire game. You had glimpses, right, where you saw them go into the bucket. You had glimpses where you saw them getting rebounds, those traveling calls. Like, what are you thinking? What are you doing? They just weren't there. I'm not going to lie, I have money on Dallas, so I would love to see them maybe step up a little bit so I can make that money. But, I think to your point, Arash, hopefully this was an awakening call for them to realize, like, look, guys, it's the finals. It's time. You know, that game in the West, it's time for you to have those kinds of games.
Exactly. But, you know, I think that was the point, is that, you know, for whatever reason, like, they've needed that game one, whether you want to call it a wake-up call, whether you want to call it a feel-out game. I mean, this is the third consecutive playoff series, I believe, they have trailed by over 25 points in game one. Grant, when you, again, followed these series and seen the Mavericks struggle in game one, generally speaking, again, I forgot that they won game one against the Timberwolves, but so this is the third series, not third straight series, but third series in this postseason where they have essentially gotten blown out in game one. What have you seen from them in game two that has enabled them to kind of, like, essentially right the ship and, you know, again, for them, you know, kind of steal home court and put themselves in a position where they can win these series?
It's the defensive intensity. That's the reason. I mean, I saw it immediately. I was at game two of the Clippers and Mavs series, and just from the tip off, it was immediate pressure. It was immediate intensity. It was a complete flip of what I saw in game one. And I've seen that in every series that they've played. It just seems like they flip a switch and they kind of use game one as a feel out game. And this is kind of why I'm not really overreacting to this game one by the Celtics, because we've seen a lot of teams go up 1-0 and they eventually, you know, the other team adjusts and we end up having a pretty good series. So for Dallas, I think for them is the defensive part of it. I mean, they just looked out of sorts defensively. And look, offensively, I think they were okay. If they get just a little bit of a better game out of Kyrie, I think they'll be okay. But they got to figure out the paint situation as well. This is a different animal. You're not going up against, you know, Mason Plumlee and Daniel Tice.
Yeah.
You're not going up against Chet Holmgren and Bismack Biyombo. You're not going up. I know Rudy Gobert is the defensive player of the year, but you're not going up against Rudy Gobert anymore. Kristaps Porzingis is a really good defender. Al Horford is a physical defender. These are guys that will make life tough for you in the paint. And on occasion, it looked like the Mavericks just did not want any part of the paint. And that's a big reason why they're in the finals. They use the paint. They use the lob. They didn't have many alley-oops. So I expect them to utilize the pick and roll a lot more. Kyrie will have a better game. He will. He will not have a bad game like this in game two. So for them, their defense is going to ratchet it up. And if not, that they're not going to have a chance in the series. They have to play defense like they did in the previous three series, specifically in game five against Minnesota, because they've had some performances where I'm saying, like, this is one of the better defenses I've seen the Mavericks have, even going back to their title days. So this series is definitely not over, guys. Like, I know that we're overreacting to this blowout, but Dallas is right in this, and they will be in it until probably game six or seven.
Yeah, I did want to bring up Kyrie with you again. I believe he has now lost 11 straight games to the Celtics since he left Boston. Has not played well. I don't want to bring up the word curse unless he gets swept here. But I mean, this is not a small sample size at this point. Again, 11 straight losses against the Celtics. We've had a week to dissect everything that went wrong with that experiment with Kyrie going to Boston. Then he comes back and, stepping on the parquet at midcourt and stepping off the fans. Your thoughts on Kyrie? Again, if the Dallas Mavericks are to win the series, or at least push it to six or seven, which I think that they will, Kyrie's going to have to play much better. And at the very least, this goes without saying, you're going to have to see Kyrie play well and the Mavericks win a couple of these games.
Yeah, you're right, Arash. You need 30 from each star player minimum. And that's what Kyrie needs to do. He needs to step up that scoring. The fact that, what did he have, like 12 points or something this game? It was insanely low. I just remember he came into the second half with 6 points. You cannot win like that. You got to at least be in double digits by the second half, right? Mm-hmm. Like going into the second half, at least have 10 points, my guy. That's a huge concern. And hopefully he makes that adjustment and hopefully he goes to the basket and stops playing scared. Cause that's kind of what it looked like he was playing. Like, I'm not saying that he is scared. I'm just saying it looked like he played scared. It looked like he was trying not to get blocked. It looked like he was trying not to, you know, get hacked or any of these things, which is just not what we're used to. At least it's not what I'm used to when I see Kyrie Irving play. Yeah. He definitely can go to that basket and go to the bucket and get those fouls and get that and one. So I'm hoping that he learns from this. We see him on Sunday and he plays a completely different game than this. To be honest with you, I really hope somebody yells at him and tells and curses him out and says, like, what was that? So, and maybe that just lights a fire under him a little bit. And I think maybe that's another thing they all need. They need a little fire under them.
Yeah.
Because there was such a fire in the Western Conference, right? Like when they came out like gangbusters, there was a little spark underneath them. Now coming into this, it feels like it's fizzled just a little bit. So they need just a little bit more of that spark. So I'm hoping that that's what Kyrie kind of turns the corner on. By the way, also,
yes,
they only had 10 offensive boards.
Yeah.
I can't get down with you if you have 10 offensive boards, my guys. you have Derek Lively down there. You have Williams. You have so many weapons down below that it makes no sense for you to have only 10 offensive rebounds in the whole entire game. So that needs to be stepped up majorly, right? I don't see that. I don't see you winning if you have less than that.
Or
you need more than that.
I agree with that. Before we go to break, Jihei and Graham, but I'll start with Jihei. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Stanley Cup final again. We have the Edmonton Oilers, obviously led by Connor McDavid, versus the Florida Panthers. I'm familiar with both teams again. The Oilers have gone head-to-head with the Kings the past three seasons. Unfortunately, the Kings have not been able to beat them. This is the first time the Oilers, during this run that they've had with Connor McDavid, get to the Stanley Cup final. The Florida Panthers, obviously, you know them quite well after they eliminated the New York Rangers. Again, I covered them in the Stanley Cup final a year ago against Las Vegas. So they are returning. Your thoughts on this? By the way, it's still surprising to me, shocking to me, when you look at the history of the Stanley Cup final and how big the sport is in Canada. A Canadian team has not won the Stanley Cup final since the Montreal Canadiens beat the Los Angeles Kings back in, I believe, 1993. I mean, that's a long time. We'll see if it happens now. But, Jihei, your initial thoughts heading into the Stanley Cup final?
Man, you got to feel bad for ESPN or whoever's covering the final. This is obviously not something that networks want to see, right? You know, Edmonton, which if you've been to Edmonton, God bless you, and the Florida Panthers. Now, when it comes to the game in its entirety, I mean, Florida's rough, man. They're physical. They come out the gate fighting, literally and figuratively. They're just extraordinarily physical, and that is something that I wish my Rangers, they should have already known that going in because we had played them throughout the year. So Edmonton knowing that, protect your stars, make sure that your goalie's good because they trust me, they're going to go after your goalie. I'm just looking forward to good hockey regardless, right?
Yeah.
I know it's not a dream for the network to have Edmonton and to have Florida in the finals, but obviously you'd rather have a major city, right? Like
it's not New York, it's not Los Angeles, it's not Chicago, and even when you say Florida, like it's not even Miami. You know the Florida Panthers are kind of in Fort Lauderdale. I know a lot of the media will be staying in Miami, but there's quite the a trek there. And again, a lot was made about the long break in the NBA. Game one of the Stanley Cup final is not until Saturday. So we have some time before then. Grant, but I think this was part of the deal. And again, the media rights deal is not done with the NBA, but I love the fact that they are on ESPN. They are on Turner. I think more people are watching the league than they have in the past when you almost, it was almost impossible to find games. As a casual fan, as a casual observer, are you interested? Have you been tracking the postseason? Will you be watching the Stanley Cup final?
I'll watch the Stanley Cup final just because, look, I love underdog teams. I love teams that not a lot of people care about. Like the Nuggets and Heat played in the NBA Finals last year, and everyone's like, "Oh, that was a horrible Finals." Or never watched it. And like, I watched it just because I love the sport. And I need Canada to get a Stanley Cup. I'm sorry. Like, I know that the Oilers have beat the Kings repeatedly in the playoffs, but I just like they need a title. And I don't care if it's Edmonton. I don't care if it's Toronto. I know Toronto's had a very, very long drought, but
very long.
The Panthers were there last year. Let's give Edmonton. Let's give Canada some love. I want the Oilers to win this one. And I want Connor McDavid to win one, because when your stars win titles and when they win Stanley Cups, it's better for the league. So I'm going to go with the Oilers. But I think it'll be a close series, though.
Yeah, I think the Oilers, I mean, I don't, obviously, I don't want either of these teams to win, but if I had to pick them, you have two of the best players in hockey right now on one team. If they don't win, there's something wrong with this sport, because, like, they're just, I mean, granted, it's a team sport, I get it, but like, these two have fought. They're just phenomenal athletes, phenomenal hockey players. Connor McDavid is just, he's incredible. I mean, incredible and fun to watch. So he's going to make it exciting. That is for sure. He's made it exciting this whole entire series, this whole entire time that he's been fighting for the West, and then fighting also for the Stanley Cup. And you can see it definitely for him. So I don't want to root for Edmonton, but I'm rooting for Edmonton. I don't want to root for Florida, so go Edmonton.
You know, I mean, and here's the thing. Ideally, obviously, the league would love to have their big media markets in this game, whether, again, you're talking about Los Angeles, New York, or Chicago, or something like that. If you're not going to get that, you want your superstars in this game. And there's no bigger star in the league right now than Connor McDavid. That was the biggest thing with baseball. You know, like, how can we get Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani into the postseason? Well, you know, effectively, they got that in the National Hockey League. They got Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup Final. So, again, if you've not been watching hockey, if you've been a casual fan, if you've been a casual observer, and again, the good thing is that these two leagues do partner up in terms of having games on when there's not a finals game. So you'll, you know, one night have the NBA Finals, the next night have your Stanley Cup Final game. So you'll be able to watch Connor McDavid. If you've not watched him yet, you probably should. All right, let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll talk about the Lakers again. What are they going to do? Who are they going to hire to be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers? When we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Welcome back to the Rosh Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, wanted to switch gears to the topic that everybody was talking about before game one of the NBA Finals in Boston. I know Grant tweeted about that because it was amazing and hilarious at the same time that everyone was talking about that. It was the Los Angeles Lakers shocking everyone on Thursday that they have targeted UConn head coach Dan Hurley to be the next head coach of their team. Dan Hurley is in Southern California, spending Friday in Los Angeles to visit Los Angeles Lakers Vice President of Basketball Operations Rob Pelinka, owner Jeannie Buss. They are really putting the full court press on Dan Hurley. They do not want him to get back on that plane back to Storrs, Connecticut, without signing a long-term contract to be the head coach of the team. So again, according to Woj, the Lakers' pursuit of Hurley to become the franchise's next head coach has accelerated, and the sides are already discussing the contractual parameters of a potential deal that would be significant in length and salary. Again, depending on when you're tuning into the show, you're on in different times. This may be a done deal. This may have collapsed. They may have gone to J.J. Redick. I'm joking, but That's how crazy this thing has gone, where we went to bed on Wednesday night believing that J.J. Redick would be the next head coach of the Lakers, and it was only a matter of time. And the only reason that there was a delay, perhaps, was that they didn't want to make the announcement while J.J. Redick was calling the NBA Finals, with the Boston Celtics being one of the teams. And then we wake up. I mean, again, that news broke at 3 something in the morning Pacific time, that the Lakers have targeted and are pursuing Dan Hurley to be the next head coach, regardless of when this happens. And again, we're still under the assumption that they're talking. It's not official. I know we talked about it yesterday, Grant, but your thoughts as Dan Hurley is in Los Angeles on Friday, talking to Jeannie Buss, talking to Rob Pelinka. They want to get this deal done. How significant would this be for the Lakers?
I know they want to get the deal done. They need to get this deal done. It's not a matter of if. When you go from a guy, look, I have a lot of respect for J.J. Redick and what he's done in media and what he did over his playing career. He's a Clipper legend, in my opinion. So I always got to give him credit. He's a fantastic X's and O's guy, but he's never coached before. And when you're coaching for a team like the Lakers, where there's going to be media scrutiny, and I know he was a player, I get it. There's going to be media scrutiny. There's going to be people on social media talking about you, and we know that he's in tune with social media because he mentions it all the time on his podcast. You have a podcast with LeBron James. It's a little bit more difficult, and I think that Dan Hurley is just way more suited to be a head coach at this point in the NBA, especially for the Lakers. He's intense. Yeah. He's won 2 back-to-back national titles. He knows what it's like to win. He played the game, obviously. So I just think that they need to get this done. This is, if they do, it's a home run hire, not just for now, not just for the LeBron and AD era, however much longer that may last, if LeBron comes back, because Rich Paul seems to think that LeBron is a free agent, but I think that he's coming back to the Lakers. But for the future, right?
Yeah.
The Lakers have a core group of guys that, you know, they really want to keep for the future, it seems like. I don't think that the Lakers are going to make a big trade, a big splash in the offseason like a lot of people thought that they were. I think they're going to hold court here and see what they have in-house and maybe make a few trades, you know, around the edges. So you're going to have a young core to develop if you bring in a guy like Dan Hurley. And we know how good he is with development of young players. So I think it's a home run hire. I think they should get it done. Whatever dollar amount he asked for, you got to do it. Because like I mentioned before, they've lowballed too many coaches at this point. You got to go all in for a guy that you know is going to give you the best chance to win, not just now, but down the road when LeBron's gone, maybe when AD's gone, when you have that other star coming in. So they need to get this done soon. It's been a pretty long search. So, it would be a home run hire, in my opinion.
Yeah, and Grant, you touched on this before, but I mean, this is significant in terms of this would be the first time since the Lakers brought back Phil Jackson, the second time around, that they really kind of, you know, backed up the Brinks truck for a head coach. I mean, they've always gone with sort of the either younger hire, inexperienced hire. Well, again, with Ty Lue, is just really embarrassing that they like lowballed the guy. And now, when you look at what they've done since then, and who knows? I mean, maybe Ty Lue would have had a short leash as well in terms of how much time that they would have given him. As crazy as that sounds, but you know, this is the first time they've said, "Hey, listen, we are signing our new head coach to a." Whatever, you know, again, we'll see if this happens. But I mean, if this happens with Dan Hurley, it would have to be a significant deal in terms of length and in terms of number. So whether that's, you know, 10 years, 100 million or something like that. I mean, like, it would have to be a crazy deal. And when I say crazy, not crazy for most teams around the league, but crazy for the Lakers in the sense that despite being one of the most storied franchises in league and sports history, just generally speaking, have not spent a lot to hire a big name head coach. They've been very fortunate in terms of getting, you know, Pat Riley, for example. But again, Phil Jackson was really the first time that they went and spent big on a head coach. GA, the significance of that, again, I think that stabilizes the franchise. I was about to call them a program. I guess you can still call it that, but he's not in college anymore. But I just think that that shows not only LeBron in AD, to Grant's point, but, you know, guys around the league, they're like, this is not a revolving door. You know, like we are really building this program and saying this is our coach for the next, you know, 10 years. What is the significance if they get this deal done with Dan Hurley?
Consistency.
Yeah.
The significance would be consistency, right? I do want to ask, though, in this tour that they're giving him, not only of the Laker facility, will he be joining our lovely South Bay and bringing his wonderful wife? Because I would love that tour to be extended over to the South Bay. Because I think that if you brought him to Manhattan Beach and didn't take him to Beverly Hills or to, like, no knock on Beverly Hills, it's beautiful, but or to the Hollywood Hills, maybe you can bring him to our little slice of heaven and that would seal the deal for you Laker fans over there.
You know, yeah, consistency. Quick, you know, when you've looked at the last couple of coaches, and not just the last couple of coaches, but since the Lakers have called the South Bay their home, their coaches have generally lived in Manhattan Beach, and you would know greater than I, but you go to Darvin Ham, you go to Frank Vogel, you go down the list, and again,
lived here for a little while too.
Yeah, and so a few people have mentioned that because Dan Hurley has, and I want to say jokingly, but it's not really jokingly, he basically said, listen, depending on what my wife thinks, I'm happy in Connecticut. I don't think she wants to, like, up and move. And someone said there's a big difference between Storrs, Connecticut and Manhattan Beach, California. And there's a big difference between his current contract and, let's just say, a 10-year, $100 million contract. So if you've got both the financial, pay raise and then the pay raise, the raise in the quality of life, I guess if you could say it like that, from a Storrs, Connecticut to Manhattan Beach, California, there's something to be said for that. So listen, I don't know the extent of the tour. I would imagine, again, that it would not just be the facility. It would be like, listen, you are literally 10 minutes away from one of the most beautiful beaches and beach communities on the planet. And you will be surrounded by, you know, I really think this is going to be a full court press. And because, again, generally speaking, you're not just recruiting the coach, right? It's his family. It's his wife. It's his, like, you know, this is like we want this to be your home. So but one of the big reasons that I do think he will, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I think he's going to make the jump. But when you just look at the current landscape of college sports, and it's really changed a lot, and I don't think it's insignificant what just happened recently in terms of the laws effectively being passed. And again, this was just the last couple of weeks. So this would not have been a question that you would have posed to Dan Hurley following winning the national championship, is that you have a situation now where you can have pay for play. You can't have schools paying players to pay play. And so, that just puts UConn behind the eight ball. And so one of the reasons that Chip Kelly no longer wanted to be a head coach, but still wanted to coach, right? But I think that's the most fascinating case study in the current state of athletics. I think Jim Harbaugh taking a massive contract to go to the Chargers is not a knock on college football. I don't think if Dan Hurley were to take this job, it is a knock on the current state of college sports. I think Chip Kelly going within the conference, going from being a head coach at UCLA to a offensive coordinator at Ohio State, that tells me this guy did not want to raise money for, like, you know, the program and NIL and having to annually protect his program, because as soon as the season's done, you know, everyone's a free agent. Think about that. Like, you just have a great recruiting class. You have the number one recruiting class in the country. And if you just have an amazing season by UCLA standards, no knock on them, but if they have a 10-win season, they go to a bowl game and win, your reward is that every player on that roster is now available to every other team in the country. And your star quarterback, for example, could now transfer to USC. I mean, just think about how crazy that sounds. I mean, like, this is not just the wild, wild west. We called that for the last couple of years. This is the new world. This is the new world of college sports. And so For that reason, I mean, that's just going to take its toll on a lot of coaches out there. And Grant, like, you know, when, again, for a while, it was like, do you want to recruit? And you had some coaches who said, listen, I like the fact that I could recruit the best players in the country, but like, I got to get on the plane every day, every weekend. I got to be at a high school game, a high school tournament, this, that, and the other. Your reward for doing that, even if you get a number one class, you don't get these guys could be gone in a year, right? And so I just think if you're Dan Hurley and you've seen what's happened to college sports, and you have this, when I say once in a lifetime, like he's going to be offered a chance to be a head coach in the NBA in the future, but you're not going to get a chance to be the head coach of the Lakers for the foreseeable future. And you're not going to get a chance to coach LeBron James. And that's significant because of this. I mean, LeBron's going to go down as one of the greatest. And again, there's a conversation. It's him and Jordan for the greatest player of all time. And if you can, I'm sure a great coach wants to coach a great player like that. So, if you're Dan Hurley and you're looking at the current state of college sports, Grant, I mean, you got to think like that plays a huge role in his decision.
Absolutely. And that's why Nick Saban stepped down too. Like he saw it as well, you know, and that's why Jim Harbaugh, I mean, look, that's why he, I think in part went to the Chargers, but here's the thing about Dan Hurley and Harbaugh is that both of those guys accomplished what they had to do.
Yeah,
Harbaugh brought a championship to Michigan and Hurley brought two championships to UConn. What's the point of bringing a guy like that to those schools to win championships? They did their job. It's not like Hurley's leaving, you know, after two Sweet 16 appearances and a couple of failures. Like this guy did everything he had to do. Like even if they would have won one championship and he would have left, it still would have been a successful run for him at UConn. Yeah. So he has every single right to go pursue something in the NBA, because I think that his offense will translate excellent to the NBA. The sets that he runs is just fantastic. There's a lot of things that I really love about it. And for a Lakers team that really needs to get better on offense, it's a seamless fit. Like you mentioned, you're not going to go coach the Charlotte Hornets. Yeah. You're not going to go coach the Atlanta Hawks. You are going to coach the Los Angeles Lakers, and a guy that, you know, coached at UConn, and UConn, look, they're well known, but they're not one of the premier programs in all of college sports history, right? They have a lot of championships, but they're not Lakers status. They're not that type. So for him to go to this, I mean, like you mentioned, it's a generational move. Maybe down the line you could get a job with the then Seattle Supersonics in 2026. But like, you know, you're never going to get an opportunity like this where you're at the peak of your coaching career, in my opinion, where you're right there, where you've done it at the college level twice now, to where you can say, look, I'm in the prime of my coaching career. I can go to the Lakers and transform that culture. He's said on radio shows and on podcasts that are popping up now that he wants to go to a team that's trying to change the culture. What do the Lakers need? A change in culture, a change in philosophy. I think this is a seamless fit. Now, it's not really up to Dan Hurley. It's up to the Lakers front office to say, hey, we are going to do everything possible, even behind the scenes, to get this guy here. We'll show him Manhattan Beach. We'll show him Redondo. We'll show him Newport. We'll show him all of these places, Hermosa. We'll show him Malibu. Get him here. Let's drive him around Rodeo Drive. Let's drive him and his wife down to Beverly Hills. Let's show them what we have to offer. It's a great time to come down to Los Angeles right now, by the way. The weather is beautiful right now. It seems like everything's lining up for them to just come down. It's going to be in the 80s. It's not going to be in the hundreds. Look, this is a hire that they have to make. I think Hurley will accept if they do offer a lucrative deal with a lot of essential benefits and, you know, the notion that you're going to have a competitive team for years. It's on the Lakers front office now. They have to go all in on this. I think Hurley's in. I think it's up to them to convince him to come over to LA.
Yeah. Oh, G Hayes muted.
Sorry about that, you guys. I was trying to look up the weather for this weekend so I can see if he should come to Manhattan Beach, because it's been a little cloudy here as of late. June gloom is not our friend right now. Everywhere else in LA it's been like 70 plus, beautiful, sunny, blah blah blah, but here in wonderful South Bay. It's been pretty muggy. But that being said, my question for both of you was, not everybody gets a cushion, though. And I feel like he'd be comfortable, obviously, at UConn. He just won back-to-back titles. This isn't a Frank Vogel situation where he gets one more year and then he's gone with UConn. My question to you guys is, how much of a cushion do you think he gets if he does take this job? Do you give him that 10-year deal?
Yeah, I mean, so I I'll go and then I'll let Grant go. But I think he made a great point that, like, Dan accepting this job will be dependent on the contract offer that the Lakers give him. And so I don't think he's taking this, for example, and the Lakers wouldn't do this. I mean, the Lakers aren't giving him a 2-year or a 2+1 or like a 3-year deal or what. Like, this is a, you know, this is a statement offer that they're going to make him. This is a 10-year, $100 million contract. Again, I don't know the terms. I don't know. And by the way, but if you're tuning in and, you know, this has gone south or that, you know, but in my view, and I'd be curious what Grant thinks, like, you're not leaving he's built the ideal program in Connecticut. Again, not only back-to-back championships, but historically dominant back-to-back champions. And they are one of the favorites to three-peat, which has not been done since John Wooden did so at UCLA. So you're not leaving that for a 2-year or a 3-year or even a 4-year contract. I mean, you are doing it for a program that's saying, we're going to give you this massive deal. And if for whatever reason we want to break it, we are going to make you wealthy beyond your years. And again, you can go back to college, but like, he's going to take this offer because it's going to be a massive deal.
I just want to say it only took him 4 years, by the way, or 3 or 4 years to get this program where it is right now. Just take that into consideration. That's it.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, when you sign a longer deal, like a lot of coaches, when they sign a 1-year deal or they sign a 2-year, 3-year, they don't get that kind of cushion that you're talking about, right? Yeah. Because it's a win now situation. You're trying to do things now. So I think when you have a 10-year deal, when you have an 8-year deal, much like we saw with Monty Williams, like he got a lucrative contract to coach the Pistons.
Yeah.
But and they didn't fire him because he's on a huge contract, exactly. Right? So he has that cushion. So if you're the Lakers, like you sign him to that big of a deal, he's going to get a lot of opportunities. Even if they fail within the first 2 years, he has 8 more years after that. Yeah. And this is your guy for the future. They're signing this guy up not for the LeBron era, like I mentioned. Yeah. They're signing him up for now and for the next 5 years. So there will be plenty of cushion. Now, if they go and sign JJ Redick, that'll be a guy that'll be like, hey, 2 years and we didn't really like it. But you're signing Hurley like for 8 to 10, he'll be there a while.
Yeah, exactly. Because with JJ, for example, I mean, if he were to leave his plum job as a broadcaster, podcaster, I mean, he could go back. With Hurley, like, if he leaves UConn, like, he's left UConn. I'm not saying that he couldn't go back, but, like you have to give him a massive deal to persuade him to leave not only a amazing program that he's built, and to GH's point, very quickly, but during a historical time period. So, you know, we'll see how this all shakes out. We'll probably have a lot to talk about when we come back on Monday. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again on Monday. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.